Hello, Gems. Welcome to another episode of TRs in Tech. I'm your host, Shelley Benhoff, and today I'm talking to Stacy Devineau, Senior Principal Engineer and co-host at Women Who Code. We talked about her experience specializing in mobile, how to negotiate salary, and she gave some excellent advice for anyone interested in a tech career. Just a preface, we both had colds while recording this, so sorry for all the sniffles. Without further ado, on to the episode. Hey, Stacy, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad that you invited me, Shelley. It was so great to get to know you recently, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a panelist, for those who are listening, for Women Who Code. And when Stacy reached out to me, I thought it was like a prank at first or something. I was like, Women Who Code can't want me. Like, seriously. But no, that was amazing, an amazing experience. But anyway, let's get to Stacy. Let's start out, tell us how you got started in tech, your tech story.
So my tech story is a little bit of an evolution and me questioning myself a lot. So I grew up in essentially a family of engineers, except for my parents. So my mom's side is all engineers, multiple degrees. My dad's side is all professors and lawyers, like, not a joke. And then my dad's a tech recruiter, my mom's a landscape designer. So the artistic and social side. And then, like, what did that actually mean? So yes, I totally went to STEM classes on the weekend because I asked for them. And my mom was nice enough to oblige. But then really what happened was my dad worked for US Robotics /3, which eventually became 3Com, came home with a Palm 1. I thought it was so, so cool. So I sold my basically everything so that he could essentially get himself a new one and give me his, right? Like, with the company discount and everything else. And so I had a Palm 1, did what any kid does, right? And put games on it. And then I started finding problems with some of the games, right? At the time, it was shareware. So what did I do? I emailed the shareware developers and said, hey, I found these defects, or problems, I think I called them, because I didn't know what a defect was, right? Like, I'm 12, right? And then one of them came back and said, do you want to try and fix them? And so I learned a little bit of Micro C as part of that. I mean, it was all done over like a chat bot and, a message board kind of thing, if you remember those, right? I was just doing like grammar fixes and like maybe a null check. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was 12, right? And I pretended to be 16 because that's what I thought an adult was. Then that just continued. So when the iPod mini came out, I was one of the people who kind of worked or helped on the Rockbox port, getting iPod Linux on there. I learned how to hex edit iPod firmware files, not Damn. Joking, so that I could put on new games and alternative assets. Shout out to the iPod Wizard community from back then. And really just kind of kept with it from there. Until my last Palm Pilot got stolen in, no joke, chemistry class my sophomore year, and I did not have money to replace it. But when the iPod Touch came out, started working on some of that with some of the iPod Wizard folks, tisk tisk, right? And then somebody tossed kind of a G1 and really kind of got involved with some of the early Android stuff going on in when Android, you know, went public with 1.6 and been with it ever since.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and kind of as a weird piece in there, in college, I came in thinking I was going to be an applied mathematics engineer.
Wow.
I don't know why I thought that was going to be what I did. Like, I was good at math, but I wasn't, like, the best person at math, right? I think I was just, like, really infatuated by multidimensional calculus at the time, which did not, when you start getting into like 5, 6, 7 dimensions of calculus and all of the other things around it, you're like, oh gosh, no. You know, in college, I was very lucky to be involved with Society of Women Engineers. And my freshman year, I was volunteering at an event for, you know, the professors of, you know, the entire organization. Ended up spending all night talking to one of the professors because I was just so unhappy, felt so directionless. I wasn't doing great. And, you know, he ultimately set me on my kind of whole career path, introduced me to my then advisor. He became kind of a lifelong mentor. Unfortunately, both of them very, very recently passed and very suddenly. But yeah, I mean, would it not have been for, you know, just various things hitting at the right time and people in my life, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be, you know, the kind of person that I am in reaching out and helping others because, you know, that professor helped me because I was helping someone else, right? And
yeah, absolutely.
That it just, it's always been a cycle, and I would be nowhere near where I am in my career would it not have been for being a volunteer, being active, and sharing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I always tell people that you don't achieve anything alone, right? Like, people tend to struggle and not ask for help either because they don't want to look stupid or, you know, they assume that if they ask questions, it'll make them look stupid and they'll like lose a job or opportunities and stuff like that. That is completely not true. Oh my God. As a person that mentors people, hires mm-hmm. people, manages people, you never want a person that doesn't ask questions ever. Like, that's not a good sign.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at long jumpers, right? Long jumpers train themselves to fall forward.
That's amazing. Yeah. So are you also a like sports / like Olympics fan?
To some degree. I mean, I watch some of the like the world events, especially on the track and field side, like when they're really like doing things that are really extraordinary, right? Like, especially like shot put and discus right now are like the best people that have ever kind of done it, right? Like, and there's just some like underappreciated arts, like Zielinski when it came to throwing the javelin. Like, this guy in the, like, 80s figured out, like, how he could maximize how much money he was making by setting records just incrementally. Like, he knew he could just keep getting better and better, so he just kept collecting bonuses and bonuses because he had all these contracts with sports organizations. I was like, dude, get your hustle on, right?
Smart.
Like, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
And there's just so much that I think is really interesting in just the world of sport that we don't take into account. Like, I think that we have some of the best talent in esports right now. And if you don't think that that's an actual sport, I don't think you've met someone who actually does this even semi-professionally. I mean,
it's sweaty. You can get sweaty.
I know for a fact multiple of them actually hit the gym for at least an hour and a half every day, because building up that quick response is so key. And you can't do that if you don't have good blood flow, if you don't have good all this other stuff. So, you know,
that's so cool.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Are you a fan of any of this stuff? Or?
Yeah, that is why I asked, because we're such kindred spirits. I just want to get to know what you like. I love track and field. I love skiing. Ski jumping blows my mind. I watch that like
so
every
terrifying.
Olympics. They're flying. They're actually flying. And then also triathlon in the winter. They do cross-country skiing, or is it biathlon? I think cross-country skiing and sharpshooting with a rifle.
Yep.
So like
they're
they'll
air
ski
rifles.
For miles and miles, air rifles, right?
Yep.
And they have to hit these tiny little targets that are really far away.
Right.
I love
and
that.
A lot of people don't think about that. Like those air rifles are like essentially, they're not shooting like regular stuff, right? So like the aerodynamics of all of that, like people are like going, oh, a rifle, that doesn't seem that far. I'm like going like, this is essentially a BB gun. Like you're doing a BB gun at 100 yards, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's really far. Yeah. And like sometimes it's like windy and they have to calculate for that. You know, it's insane. Or sometimes it's snowing and they have to calculate for that. It's crazy. Anyway.
The archery got off on a tangent. Oh, like if you've ever
I love archery too.
Bow, like
no, I haven't.
You've never.
I would like
one?
To. I would love to. I think that's a great survival skill. If there's ever an apocalypse or something, it would be really good to have like a crossbow or something like that and understand how to use it. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, things I think about sometimes, random things. All right, let's get back to you. And your specialty is actually Android. Mm-hmm. I love the Android. I started out a iPhone person. And then after a while, I was like, there's a lot of restrictions here. And so I changed to Android. I'm never going back. I love it so much. What inspired you to specialize in it?
Well, really what brought me into the community was, hey, we're not calling it hacking, we're calling it development, right? The encouragement to come into the platform and do what you want early on really brought me in. Because, you know, I had already been playing in a lot of playgrounds where they only wanted certain people in their playgrounds, you know, quote unquote, the right people. And when you're just learning or you're early on in your career, you're not the right people, right? And I really liked that kind of egalitarian style of, hey, here it is, do what you want, figure it out, whatever. And it's kind of kept that way, right? So one of the best things about Android is that, just like what you highlight, is you can kind of make it how you want it to be. I've always used an alternative launcher. I'm sure that Google kind of goes like, I really wish that you would give us money from using ours. You know, it's evolved over time, how I use it, what I use it for, you know. Now I use a Niagara launcher, if you're familiar with that. Yes,
I am not.
Pay the premium.
I don't know why I'm shaking my head. Yes.
But I've used Smart Launcher, and I honestly pay for a lot of these. And buy ones just to try, just to keep people developing on it, right? Like, it's kind of like throwing money at projects you believe in. I think that having high quality alternative launchers is something that really kind of speaks to me personally. And why have I kind of specialized in Android? Well, so I came in from like the embedded side in security. My first job, paid gig in Android, was actually working for device manufacturers. And this was part of a lab. I guarantee you they had no idea how young I was. And now it's been over a decade, so I can kind of say that, like, I automated every single part of my job, including all of the reporting and the, like, sending the reports and all this other stuff, including a number of things that AT&T and some of these carriers did not think was possible. But because I knew how the operating system worked and some of the other stuff, I was able to do my little pilots. But I've helped fix a lot of very early Android problems, from like actually coding in certain things and sending it off. And then after that, I did an entire OS distribution. I wrote a root method that was really, really sketchy, but it worked. A bunch of, you know, actual iterations of an operating system with a bunch of apps and, you know, everything from like kernel work all the way up through making it really pretty and cohesive, doing graphics because we didn't have a graphic artist. And then really kind of went down retail and built out a lot of very immersive retail and product level experiences for various companies. And, you know, in my last position, also touching into more of the cloud and services side. So really, you know, at this point, all of these things are Android, but I've touched every single thing that only web might touch part of this, only platform might touch part of this. But because, you know, I'm talking about delivering an ecosystem, I get to touch all of it and it's still Android, right? Like it's, and I made a post about this last week. It's the last full, real, full stack development, right? If I want to get into AI, I can do it in mobile. If I want to do IoT, mobile. If I want to do, you know, first app for an emerging market or something like that, mobile, right? I want to do super high performance, mobile, right? Like I can do anything on that platform. And that's why I've stayed in the space, honestly, because I get to keep learning new things.
I love that. Yeah, I have never, well, no, I shouldn't say never. I experimented with game dev over the past like 2 years or so, and I've like exported a game and installed it on my Android and I can like play it, you know? It's interesting. And I was like, how do I do controls? And I learned like touch controls and all of that. It was really cool. So I can see where getting down into like the core of everything, and especially performance. A lot of apps and stuff don't have great performance. A lot of them crash the first time that you open them, but then after that, they're fine. And I'm always like, why? Why does that happen?
More than likely for that, it's actually due to an update. A lot of folks don't do testing of their upgrade systems, and they'll actually have like cache that doesn't match or map anymore that they rely on at startup, and it just causes a failure. This is actually like one of the number one issues with React apps So if you have a React Native app, more than likely it shuts itself down because of this a lot.
Yeah.
And not just on updates. Right. Sometimes it's literally just cached values and remote values. And that's kind of a weird space in and of itself, right? So just talking about mobile, right? Like that encompasses also, are you a Xamarin developer? Are you Flutter? Are you Ionic? Are you React? Right? Like all of these things. Or you could be, I think, what is it called? Like Appium or something like that. Cordova, right? Like all of these things play into that, right? And it's all part of that space. And, you know, it's getting kind of interesting from the specialization side. I think also from the cross-platform side, right? So Kotlin multi-platform, Kotlin multi-mobile, and actually being able to do UI that's shared.
Absolutely. You know,
and actually runs fully native, right? So
right.
Flutter runs on kind of like the C layer, right? So the game layer, right? Because it's Skia. Well, they just introduced their own derivative of Skia that cuts out a lot of the Chrome stuff that only applies to web. So if you don't know, Chrome's rendering engine is Skia. They now have their own that only applies to them. And Flutter Web has exploded too. So, and Kotlin has Kotlin to JavaScript. So, I mean, like the convergence is real, right? Like it's, and the languages are getting closer and closer together, right? Declarative UI is fairly standardized in terms of styling and how you put it together. Cross View, Flutter, even Swift UI, Jetpack Compose, like that's all becoming, you know, fairly interop, especially on the functional language side, right? Like, it just means everything's going to translate.
Yes, absolutely. So in mobile, do you know, like, what is the ratio of, like, women to men? Because I see I've interviewed a lot of mobile devs on this show.
So I it continues to get better and better. But you know, you have kind of the same classic problem as every other kind of technical role, which at this point, yes, the entry and, you know, just booming into senior level roles are, you know, becoming more distributed in terms of diversity, but we don't have that kind of representation, especially on the very senior tech side. Like the numbers of women in not just mobile, but everywhere, right? I've been at very female forward and very diversity forward organizations where there are, you know, let's say out of 90 plus staff plus engineers, right? Less than 15 are women.
Yeah.
Like that's
actually, that's a pretty good number.
I know.
In my experience, it's usually less. Yeah.
I've been the highest ranking female in my organization. I guess you can count four jobs. Four jobs.
Nice. You're awesome.
I'm saying that like that like I should not be the highest ranking person in like I should not be alone, right? Like or I shouldn't be rank and file.
Yeah.
Right. Does make mentoring getting mentors that align on some of that means, you know, kind of looking alternatively as well. But, you know, as part of that, I've really been trying to build out with Women Who Code more programming towards mid and late career folks so that we kind of build out that part of the community, because you can't have mentor circles without mentors, right?
Yeah.
Just realistically.
Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of Women Who Code, how did you get started in that? And how can I get started in that?
So I'm actually a part of a number of women tech organizations. So also kind of a longstanding member with Women Tech Makers back in, like, I think 2014. So 2014 for Women Tech Makers, I actually also ran the community side for North America, so US and Canada, for a couple of years, and served on the board for that, essentially. But with regard to Women Who Code, I got involved with that basically through being a part of Google developer groups, and then, you know, really going to a lot of meetups. And at the time, Women Who Code was pretty small. It was once a month. And it was just nice to meet other women in tech, because I was so used to being so by myself in a lot of ways. And it's kind of the same reason I was in a sorority in college. It's like, just to... just to get that camaraderie, right? So I really enjoyed all of that, and actually helped one of my mentees become very involved with Women Who Code. I was already running a couple of tech groups at the time, could not get involved, and they were looking to do a shift in leadership. Got a little tinge there, right?
It's okay.
Right. So they were actually looking to bring on new leadership. And one of my mentees was looking for a way to contribute. Made that introduction. She goes on and built it out to multiple locations. So now there was... if you're familiar with Dallas-Fort Worth, there was Fort Worth, there was downtown, there was North Dallas, and then Denton. So now we had four locations going. I wasn't, like, super involved at that time. Then later she brings me on as kind of an evangelist. And that was not an official role at that time, but really just... kind of a title that they were thinking about in order to represent Women Who Code in getting locations, getting funding, all that kind of stuff. So from there, I went through, and COVID happened. A lot of the leadership changed. And I started to kind of get reinvolved a little bit as they were all online. And the new leadership asked if I would like to kind of rejoin in an official capacity. And I did, because this was all new leadership. And I wanted to kind of go, hey, here's ways that we were able to get funding in the past, get locations in the past, and, you know, kind of rebuild again that older, more experienced group. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's such a great group, and I had such a fun time on my panel. And I remember at the beginning or at the end of it, there was like a slide with specific positions available, like how can a person like me get involved in an actual like position with that organization?
Well, there are a number of specializations. So there's women who code mobile, there's front-end web, there's blockchain. So you can get involved with those specific groups and help volunteer with those, you know, kind of wherever you are. There's also the regional, right? So if you don't have a Women Who Code, you can start one. Or you can join or see about joining the leadership or just joining the organization locally, seeing how you can help. That's all it is at the end of the day.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's important to spend time listening to other women. Honestly, I've learned so much off of this show. One of the topics that I actually haven't covered a whole lot that you actually have a talk on is negotiating salary. That's a really, really good one. What tips do you have about that?
So the number one thing I would say is come in well-researched before you even start the interviews. You need to know what you're worth, what makes you special, what kind of organizations would be a good fit for you. And because all of that plays into what you can negotiate, right? Mm-hmm. Are you marriage material? Or are you just the person they need right now, right? That all affects how well you can negotiate. And really just understand the markets, understand the company. It's not about trying to, quote, maximize on TC. Like, we're not just people on blind, right? Like, just going, oh, what's your TC or die, right? Like, no. It's about finding the right position and being compensated fairly for the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And being mindful of the organization that you're negotiating with. If that's something that's not possible for them to do, it's not possible. Yeah. Find alternatives or just be able to walk away.
Absolutely. I would also say that money is not the only thing that you can negotiate. Whenever I was, you know, offered a job with the standard 2 weeks of vacation, I was like, absolutely not. I need four. Or at my last job, I actually got six. So it's because I would tell them that I can only perform at my highest potential if I am well rested. Because, you know, in tech, a lot of the times, especially for me, as a lead dev, I was just on call all the time. There were some times I would work, you know, 80, 90, 100 hours a week, 7 days a week. And so after that, I would take time off because I had to recoup. So just remember, it's not just money. Yeah. There's a lot that you can negotiate.
There are a ton of things that you can negotiate. Sometimes you can negotiate, you know, things into the contract for later or things to be reviewed for a year from now. You know, you can put assurances. I have had one instance where the company decided not to honor those and I walked. Yeah. So, but that has to do with my value system, right? Like, you can't, I value honesty and loyalty really highly. So, you know, if you make a promise, you complete it, just like I do with my work. Right. So that's what matters to me. So I totally walked. But I understand that's not a thing for everyone. And there are so many other ways that you can negotiate. It's all dependent on the organization that you're working with.
Once you have a job and you are trying to figure out your career, especially early on, it's really, really hard. What are the best ways to jump up and keep on climbing that ladder?
It's really about doing your job and executing it well. And part of your job, if you don't know it, your job isn't just to do what you're told. Your job is to ask your leadership, what can I do to support you? What is the highest value thing on your table? What do I not know that I should know? If you're coming in just going, all I got to do is program this or pay attention to, you know, the tickets that are laid in front of me, you're going to stay exactly where you are. Mm-hmm. Because you're not able to prioritize. You want to move up, you need to learn how to strategize. Part of strategy is understanding the value of the people that you're working with and being interactive. And making sure that your organization meets all of its demands, even if you're not the one in charge.
Absolutely.
It's a form of leadership, but it's a form of leadership in that you are supporting your leaders. And I do that at every level, right? Mm-hmm. So even if, as I get higher, what do I ask of my director? What do I ask of my VP? What can I do to support you? What information are you looking for and you're not getting answers on? Mm-hmm. How can I be your advocate? How can I enact your vision? Right? What is your vision? Sometimes those are tough questions, but, and then honestly, start asking the same thing on the bottom side, right? It's not just about making things work for the people above you, becomes more about making things work for the people below you. What can I do to support you? What can I do to help you move on in your career?
Yeah.
How can I give you the important tools?
Right. Yeah. I always say that the I have this pet peeve where like really, really smart and capable people become complacent and don't reach their full potential, and more so don't have leaders who know how to bring that out, right? Or show them how to create high quality software that won't break all the time. I've had so many jobs where nobody did maintenance. You know, maintenance tasks are important because if you don't do them, then servers get sick and you have to patch them or whatever. It drives me crazy when I see that.
Well, a lot of times
complacency.
It's just, you know, and my experience is learned, right? So I've definitely made those mistakes myself in my career.
Oh, same.
Right?
Yeah.
But coming in and saying, hey, 70% of the time, we're going to do the stuff on our roadmap. 30% of the time, we're going to do our things that are part of this other roadmap, which is just maintaining, updating, upgrading, right? So you always, and the way you sell that is, hey, you look at that, that's 99% uptime. That's 99% defect-free. That's, we are able to run deployments every 2 weeks. That means for mobile, which is pretty good, right? Depending on your size. some places actually, I think, deploy daily, which is a
lot.
That's
weird. Yeah, that's a lot. That's stressful. I don't love that. So what advice do you have for anybody who is interested in a tech career?
Brand yourself early.
Yeah.
Brand yourself early. Understand what makes you unique, what you're uniquely capable of delivering beyond the technical. Because being capable at this point is table stakes. You want to get employed, you do it by your unique capabilities, right? Mm-hmm. What do you as a person bring to the table? For me, it's usually very like high energy, positivity. Let's move forward, keep going, right? But everyone has something about them that they can bring that's extra. Sometimes it's just being really, really dedicated towards building extremely high quality, right? Or doing the most technical work, right? That can be its own specialty. So brand yourself early, understand yourself early. This is true in any job, not just tech, right? And the same rules still apply. Now, in terms of overall, like if you want to get into tech, figure out what you want to do in tech, what your 5-year roadmap is. And when I talk about branding yourself early, talk about building a high quality showcase, high quality LinkedIn profile, high quality resume. So many people will never get a call back because their LinkedIn profile just looks super basic, or they don't have a showcase, or they don't have a well put together resume. Because when you show that you can edit and present yourself well, that is what they are expecting you to be able to do in the job. That you can edit yourself and present your work well. You know what good looks like. If they don't see what good looks like on your resume, on your LinkedIn profile, in your grouping of work, they're not going to call back. They're just not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard. It's also about who you know. Like, honestly, just get to know people personally and try not to have to apply to job ads like cold, because you're in a huge pile of people, you know.
Especially right now.
Really hard to be seen. Right now it's especially hard because layoffs, and you are competing against people who were previously at Microsoft and, you know, Google and stuff like that. It's really hard to compete against them.
You're telling me. So
preaching to the choir.
A little bit, but really it's, you know, and I'm talking to my recruiter friends. Yes, make recruiter friends, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Within a 24-hour time period for like an engineering manager position, you're seeing over 1,000 applicants.
Yeah.
For the most part, qualified applicants.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. It used to be they'd get, you know, a few hundred, 70% were trash, right? Now, not the case. So you also kind of have a lot of recruiters that are in tough spots, worried about their job, or they laid off from recruiting. So they have more workload. Now they're seeing over 1,000 applicants. And even if you make it past the like initial stage, they might be so overworked that they just drop balls. I've had so many times where I was supposed to have gotten some prep document or some, you know, heads up thing and didn't. And it affect, you know, in some cases it affected my ability to perform in the interview. So like, just be prepared for anything. If an organization just isn't organized right now, I just say act a little bit of forgiveness. I know that it's hard, but you know, we're going through a weird time right now. So if you're looking right now, just be aware that nothing's personal. Nothing is against you or anything like that. It's just the reality of where we are right now. And I'll be also honest, I made the investment in big tech, and that was turned out was not the right route, because they all just kept shutting down, right? Like you're done with the interview cycle. You're at team matching, group matching, whatever. Right. So, you know, be diversified in where you're applying if you are. So, and when you're early in your career, apply to hundreds, apply to 10 to 20 places a day.
Yeah.
Track where you applied. And if you see an opening and you apply, even if someone's a second connection on LinkedIn, say, hey, I know so-and-so. I see that you and I know this person. I just applied to your open job. I'd love to get to know more about you or whatever. Or, you know, or contact your middle contact and say, hey, would you do an intro? During this period of time, I've done so many warm introductions. It's mind-boggling. So find out who the hiring manager is. It's not hard. A lot of times, you know, if you are part of Women Who Code, Women Tech Makers, developer groups, you know, front-end foxes, all of that, right? You will have some kind of network to start with.
That's amazing advice. I've never heard anybody say that before. And we are close to the end of the show, which sucks because I could talk to you for hours and hours, but I am aware of, you know, scheduling and all of that stuff. So I don't want to keep you too long. But before I let you go, can you tell people where to connect online with you and promote yourself?
Kind of off Twitter still at the moment, but I'm easy to find. I'm really posting a lot more on LinkedIn these days, and of course on Mastodon. So I'm at Stacy at androiddev.social if you want to meet me there. And then I'm just /in Stacy-Devino on LinkedIn. I'm the only person who shows up with my name, so that's very convenient from an SEO side, but I'm always available. My DMs are open. And I do that even with the kind of weirdos that exist online, right? Like, because I really believe that, you know, just being there, being available for folks is so incredibly valuable. And I have so many stories around that too. But if you're just stuck, don't know, whatever, just reach out. You know, I might not be able to help, but I probably know someone who can.
I love that. Stacy, thank you so much. This was so much fun.
And Shelly, anytime, just chit-chatting with you is amazing.
If you want to support us, please like, subscribe, and share this episode with your fellow gems. Let me know in the comments what other topics you would like me to cover, and follow TRs in Tech on social media and use the hashtag #MakeYourselfShine. Thanks for watching or listening, and have a great day.